With Maddie.
Hiya!
Fucking nailed it again. Welcome back, hotties. I just wanted to give you an update as well. We didn't clarify, but at the end of the start of the first episode we did, and I smashed my smoothie on the ground, took us quite the time to clean that up, and I thought it's actually a great way for us to start this podcast.
It was, hey.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Except I only brought one pair of pants because I thought, well, nobody's going to see my pants. I'll just wear the same pair of pants, but just like heaps of different tops to change into. But now I'm not wearing any pants because they are full of smoothie.
Mm.
And at some point they might bake enough that the smoothie's dry and crusty and I can rewear them and not just wear be pants free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Mm, it is. So this is part two of me talking about how I got to be.
Yeah, so we're up to, like, in the amazing life, it's just phenomenal, all these little pieces that come out that I just don't know. You know, the person that you are now, you never think that that's where you've come from. Like, I love hearing about it. So we got up, you went to work in Canberra, working in Parliament, and then you realised it's not for you.
Yeah, not for me. And I was like, well, you know what, I gave it a red hot go. I definitely I tried.
Yeah.
And it's not for me. There's parts I really love about it, but not for me long term.
Yes. Yeah.
And so that was like, I really need to go back to the original idea of having a creative career. And I knew my parents would be deeply disappointed and not okay with that. And so it felt like coming out to them.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so I remember flying home and I was like, right, I'm going to tell my parents this trip, my plans. And my dad picked me up at the airport and my dad's just this bushman, this big black Ned Kelly beard, and he speaks in a lot of grunts and a lot of swear words. And if you think I swear, just you fucking wait till you meet my father.
Yeah.
Not that you'd be able to understand most of what he says anyway because
he's got his own little language.
Yeah, it's an accent.
Yeah.
It's, you know, very regional. Anyway, so he picked me up at the airport and I was like, Dad, I've got something to tell you. And like, this is like right when he's picked me up. Like, I couldn't even hold it in any longer. He's like, what? And I said, I just wanted you to know that I've decided I'm actually going to be an artist. That's what I'm going to do for my career, for the rest of my life. And he said, well, there's no money in that, is there? And I said, yeah, I know. And like, you're a farmer, your father was a farmer and your father's father was a farmer. And there is no money in farming either. So I guess I just come from a really long line of dreamers. What a fucking line.
Oh.
I didn't even think of it.
Oh, you didn't even prepare that.
I didn't prepare whatsoever. But when it came out, I thought, I'm going to remember that one forever.
That is powerful.
Yeah. And he said, ugh, you think you're funny, don't you? And I said, yeah, it's fucking golden. Fucking golden.
You're like, that's some of my best work. Yeah. I've just given.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And 20 years on, I'll recount this story to one of my best friends in a podcast studio. Well, I discuss how rich and famous I've become.
Wow.
So that was sort of like it. I was like, right, I'm going to work out how to make money.
Yeah.
And I also like already knew at that age, like we were going to have kids eventually and I wanted to be around them as well. So I wanted to work out a way to make money doing creative stuff and also for it to be flexible enough to have kids and be present for them. So that was it. I was just like, right, I'm just going to throw everything at the wall to work out how the fuck to make this happen. So I did heaps of stuff. I blogged, I did wedding photography, I did portrait photography, I ran creativity workshops in person, I ran like spiritual retreats. Like I think I ran my first retreat, 3-day retreat. I must have been like 24 or 25, maybe younger.
Wow.
And I'd never even been on a retreat before.
Were you nervous? Were you scared?
No.
No. That's phenomenal.
I just trusted that whatever I needed to know, I'd learn during that time. Like I had like, and I gave myself a basic framework of what I think I would do and stuff like that. And then I just sort of adjusted the energy. And also just from a pure hippie level, I was like, right, whatever energy needs to come through will teach me. And it always did. It always drop in and people could notice the difference.
Look how well that served you, you know, that like that no fear and oh, that's incredible.
Mm.
It really is. that you were just able to access that so young as well.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
I was like, fuck it, why not? Try it. Like, other people do it. Like,
yeah.
I'm going to just give it a go and see what happens. And it was just ended up being just such a magical time.
And you weren't held back by your age or anything?
No, why?
I love that.
Why would I be? Yep. Just like whoever would turn up and trust that I was the right person. And so, like, I was probably one of the youngest ones in retreat, and they were probably like women like 20, 30 years older than me, and I'm teaching them, but what the fuck ever, I don't care. Like, they turned up for a reason, and so I can just turn up and serve in the best way that I can. And yeah, it was fucking incredible. So I just was just trying out all the things and selling art at markets, like you did at, so I was at the old Bus Depot Markets in Canberra. Yeah. I ran my first solo art retreat in my early 20s as well. Solo art exhibition, sorry. And just playing around with how to make money from this. And at a certain point, like a couple of years in, I was like, okay, in order for me to actually finally leave my government job, I would need to earn at least $30,000 in the next year.
Yeah.
And then when I looked at the figures of how many art prints and workshops I need to run, I was like, there's no fucking way I know how to do this, like how to sell these numbers.
Yeah.
And I think like at that turning point, I think a lot of people go, well, I just can't do it. But my brain was like, well, fuck it. There's other people have worked out how to market and how to sell stuff.
Yeah.
I just need to work out what they've learned and apply it to myself and do that. And so I became like just a real student of business and marketing. Like, right, let's work out what actually fucking works.
Yeah.
And it's not something that came innately to me. Like, it's not something I've ever been interested in at all.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I was born really shit with money. I had zero entrepreneurial desires. But it was just something I wanted.
Yes.
You know,
so it happened.
So I was just like, fuck it, I'll just learn it. And this is the thing. Like, I think everyone's like, has this misconception that, you know, some entrepreneurs, they have this origin story of like, oh yeah, I was always making money when I was a kid and like, you know, I set up a business and was mowing lawns. I couldn't be fucked doing any of that. I'm a lazy girl at heart.
No.
Not for me. I'd rather just make art in my bedroom instead. So like actually like learning those things about money and learning about business and marketing and just trying it out step by step by step. And so I did earn $30,000 the next year, and then I doubled it the next year to 60, and then over $100,000, and then it just kept on going up from there. And so, like, the biggest year I've ever had is like $2.8 million in a year. I've earned just crossed over the $14 million revenue.
Yay!
Yeah.
Oh, snaps to Leone. How exciting is that?
I know. And like, it never would have occurred to me when I started my business that would be aware. All I wanted was like, if I can just get to $100,000 a year, then that should be enough. Like, once we have kids and stuff like that, for to be our like total income, like as a family,
and us for that to be it.
Yeah.
Wow.
So in that time, like building my business, like it was a long period of time. So like I still worked for 6 years while I was building my business on the side.
Yeah.
And so it always just kind of fit in the corners of my life. And I didn't actually leave my government job until I was 9 months pregnant with my first daughter.
Wow.
Yeah. And then it's just I didn't go back after that.
Did you know that you weren't going to go back?
Yeah. That was the whole plan. And I'd reduce my hours. So, like, I started working 4 days a week and that felt like this enormous, like, holy shit, can I actually do that? I only work 4 days a week. And then once the business picked up more, I did 3 days a week. But I was in just this really cool spot in, like, after I'd worked in the secretary's office and worked in Parliament House, I ended up finding a job as a web editor for business.gov.au.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's fucking hilarious because I was writing content for small business owners. It was boring as batshit though. But I stayed because I had the most amazing boss, Lily, who's still one of my dearest friends, and just this whole team. And we just made as much craziness as fun as we could. So I would do shit like always had angel cards on my desk and always give people angel card readings. And always loved giving people back massages and like shoulder massages. So if I go into a lift at any point, there would just be people that just turn around and show me their shoulders. And I'd be like, oh, let's go, let's do that. Deb, who's another one of my dear friends, she was our HR manager. And she had to actually field a complaint about me because I was swearing so much at work.
Who would complain about you?
Some fucking loser. Who cares? Ouch. I mean, I probably was saying some really atrocious shit. Like, I got really into saying cunt for a while there.
As all women should. Women should have a period in their life where they do that.
That's so. Right. Exactly. What else is a girl in her 20s supposed to do with her lives?
God, haters are going to hate, aren't they?
Yeah. But also, I couldn't give a shit. so I was like, whatever. I'm going to blow this popsicle stand anyway and have a fucking miracle time of it.
Yeah. Hey, time for an ad.
Oh, my God, my favourite. Friends, if you are, like so many people, going through a cash crunch right now where it's that much harder to make ends meet, to bring in the revenue that you were bringing in, and to pay for the things that you need to pay for, I have a brand new free thing for you. It is called the Cash Crunch Workshop, and it's to help you with how to make more money and save more money even when times get tough. So go to leonidawson.com/cashcrunch. You'll be able to find the link in the show notes. This is my heartfelt offering to you. We've had thousands of people already use this workshop and just find it so helpful in helping them get back on track, reducing a lot of those financial anxieties and making a new, more abundant future going forward. So go check it out, leonidawson.com/cashcrunch.
Oh, we're back.
Oh my God, wasn't that incredible? God, that felt so long. Good.
So long and so good. Oh, we do love an ad.
Yeah. I need to introduce you to Lily and Deb sometime. Actually, Deb was coming, I meant to tell you, Deb is thinking of coming up in like May and running a whole bunch of women's circles and stuff.
Stop. Because I hear about Deb all the time. I know. Oh, I'm so excited.
I love Deb so much. And she's honestly just the gold standard when it comes to women's circles. Oh, by the way, if you're on the Sunshine Coast or Brisbane or whatever and you want to come to one of Deb's workshops or circles, I think it's happening May-ish.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm so keen.
Yeah, Deb's the best. I always say to people, like, I am not Leonie if I hadn't have met Deb. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yes, and I know what you mean.
I'm your Deb.
Yes. Yeah. I was like, I'm not Maddie if I hadn't, you know, like, yeah. It's phenomenal, isn't it? Though the people that you can, like your, that principal in school, mm-hmm. like that one impact they have and they're not even close. You're not even, I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It changes your life and changes who you are.
It does.
Yeah.
And Deb was the one, like, I was like 21 when I started working with her and she was like, I do these women's circles. I want you to come. And I was like, women? Mm-mm, not for me. Because I was still in this phase of like women are too socially complicated for me. And she was like, no, it's not like that. You need to come. And I resisted it. And then it finally went and it was like immediately like, oh, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And it helped me like relate to women. And now like I don't really have that many dude friends in my life. It's mostly just a women fest.
Oh, I'm so women obsessed. Relationships are so rich, hey.
Delicious. Yum.
Wow. But yeah. You used to run like fucking awesome women's circles too, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Like you'd go up to the mountains mm-hmm. at nighttime mm-hmm. and be naked or something.
Yeah, all the time.
Oh, all dreaming.
The time. I know, it was the fucking greatest. So once Deb, well, I started with Elenita as well. So Elenita is Deb's Deb. So she's like 20, like it's just a fucking lineage of women. I would love for you to even meet Elenita. Elenita was there when I gave birth to Starry. Elenita married me and Chris.
Oh.
Yeah, Elenita is amazing. So Elenita's like maybe 40 years older than me. She's just the most incredible, inspiring human. Yeah, so Elenita and Deb weren't running circles and I was really missing them. And so I started running my own circles and they were just so beautiful and so hippie and so potent. And I'd just be like, whatever wants to come through, I'll just follow it. And I remember at one point, oh my God, my friend Kalia and I and Deb and a couple of the women went to this women's circle and we were all just like trying out intuitive healing on each other. And Deb's going to hate that I share this, but whatever.
Sorry, Deb.
Yeah, she should stop being such a spewer if she didn't want this talked about, because we were like doing this huge like intuitive healing and then like one of my friends was talking in tongue during it and we're all just like, oh yeah, we're all tuning in and like we're all like, oh my God, there's something in your stomach, you need to get it out. And Deb just spews all over herself on the healing table. And then she sort of comes to her and she goes, oh my God, I just had a vision that I spewed. Thank God I didn't do that in real life. And that's exactly the silence in the room. We're like, doll.
Oh no.
We're just like, you know what? Just keep your eyes closed. We'll clean you up, babes. We will clean you up.
Oh, and isn't that friendship? That's that is beautiful. Just
clean up this lady's healing spirit.
But isn't that nice that she thought it was a vision too? She actually experienced it in her body.
I know.
Just and meanwhile, it. Just like, just and everyone's
every,
like,
oh, bloody intense bones. That is so intense. So intense.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, and Deb, anyway,
it was just awesome. And then we'd like, you know, be like women's circle down at like the Cotter River in Canberra, which is not a unpopulated, like it's a very popular place to go to, and we'd be like, you know what, we just all need to take our clothes off and be mermaids in the water. And then like somebody like canoe past and be like, hi. lucky the water's not clear, you can see the top of our boobies just floating in the water.
Divine feminine, really, isn't it?
Yeah, being I mean, like, that person's like the luckiest person in alive.
They didn't realize those were Leonie Dawson's boobs.
Oh my God. Mermaid boobies in the water. What else? Yeah. So it was just like a really rich time for me, you know. Like,
yeah, still doing the both.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you have those beautiful friendships. Oh,
and then, so good.
So you decided you had Starry.
Yes.
Oh, and then did it all just take off?
Well, it was already taking off. So I knew that we'd get around the six figures and had Starry. We'd been planning to move back to my small hometown once we had kids because we thought that would be nice. It wasn't. Spoiler alert, it was not. We thought having family support would be good. Spoiler alert, it was not. And Chris was working in the government as well, and so I was like, I think the business can support us. Let's move back to Proserpine. And, you know, of course, if it doesn't work out in a year, we can come back. So we moved back to my small hometown, and it was really challenging because Starry didn't sleep, and it felt like my whole internal world was kind of imploding at that point. I had, you know, quite severe postnatal depression and anxiety, but I didn't feel able to voice that because I felt so much shame around it, and a lot of it was because my own mother has a lot of judgments about people who have postnatal depression, and she'd always said that, and I was just like, well, I can't tell her what's going on. And also just my parents were so expecting me to be who I used to be as a teenager and without any boundaries, because my family is quite boundaryless in a lot of ways, and so they would just come to our house constantly, like three times a day at least, and if we didn't answer the front door, they would come and peer in the windows, they would come let themselves in through the back door and just kind of take over.
Yeah, no boundaries.
And I'd be like, hey, no, stop. Like, you keep waking the baby up. I'm trying to get some work done. And they were just really angry about that. They were like, well, this is not what we expected, you know. Like, we should be allowed to do this.
This is not how we wanted you to parent.
That's right. But it was less about, like, the way I wanted to parent and more about the function they wanted me to be as a daughter. Mm. And I was like, oh, this is really fucked. And I felt so conflicted because I'm trying to be a parent, I'm trying to be a good daughter, I'm trying to be a good sister and a good wife. And it was just, I was leading to really having a breakdown over it. And at the same time, my parents then had a spontaneous separation, and other family members separated at the same time as well. And it just became this awful, like, fuckery, basically. And we went to relationship counselling because we weren't coping, and I was going to individual counselling and all that kind of stuff. And I realised, like, oh, in order to have a new family, you do need to break away.
Yes, yeah.
From your old family. You can't keep providing the same functions that you could before. Like,
yeah,
I kind of felt like my parents still wanted me to prioritise them over my kid and prioritise them over my husband, and that's not going to fucking work. That's going to end in divorce and not being the parent I want.
Yeah.
So it was really hard, and I had to get a lot of coaching around how to have boundaries with my parents. And I was like 27, and that's like when I felt like I had to grow up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was big and it was hard. And at a certain point, Chris and I were like, we actually just can't keep living in this town because it's so hard to have boundaries and be intruded
nourishing
upon.
Us, yeah.
Yeah, and every time I'd keep on trying to have more boundaries and communicate them, we're just met with anger and resistance and just not listening whatsoever.
Yeah.
That's fucked. Oh, and something to look forward to, but when you're 27 around, you go through something called Saturn Return.
Oh.
And it's where Saturn returns to the place that it was when you were born, and it brings up like all of your shit that you need to heal. So that's delicious. Awesome. So book in that breakdown.
I feel like it's happened a couple of years early. But
maybe.
You know what? Who knows?
Maybe Saturn's on speed. Maybe it's happening faster.
Yeah, speeding up.
You know, if you do this work now, then you don't have to confront as much then.
That's it, isn't it?
Yeah. And then it happens again when you're like 50, 54 kind of thing because it comes back around because it takes that amount of time to do the full orbit of whatever, return to the place it was.
Wow.
Saturn return, what a bitch.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people do die at the age of 27 as well.
What?
Yeah, like, you know, it's like a lot of famous people that have died at that age. Like, they just exit. But that's okay. It's
they
like
just exit.
Well, it's like, you know, like Janis Joplin and Bob Marley. And but this is before your time. You probably don't know who these people are.
I do know who Bob Marley is.
Oh, good on you. Good on you. I'm proud
of
you.
No woman, no cry. La, da, 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 da. No woman, no cry.
Do you think we should just like spend the rest of our time just singing? Because this actually sounds incredible.
I actually think we're, I don't know if it's the headsets that we put these headsets on and immediately sort of became.
Britney. Do you know who Britney is? Britney Spears.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yes.
Oh, fuck off. Don't pretend like you don't know. Okay. So we were at the Heart Center Business Conference. Maddie's there with me and Alanis Morissette comes on with Jagged Little Pill and immediately me and all the other women are like just jamming out.
Even
and
now I'm like, what is that?
Yeah. Maddie's like going, oh, okay. Like not jamming out in quite the level of enthusiasm. And then afterwards she's like, who was that? And we're like, excuse me? Alanis Morissette. She goes, never heard of her.
I still, even you saying this, I can't even recall.
Fuck my life.
It's a lifetime before me.
Jesus Christ. Alanis Morissette is so important to our people.
So important to our people.
To our generation. Just like Tracy Chapman. Like, do you know who Tracy Chapman is, sweetheart?
Yeah, that's the, isn't it? It sounds like the man with the little mustache and he was a mime.
But
Charlie Chaplin.
So you think Tracy Chapman is Charlie Chaplin?
I don't know. That was just the connection my brain made just there.
It's guys, if you have not got a Gen Z-er or a Gen Alpha in your life, please run the fuck out and get yourself one because.
Do I make you feel old sometimes? Or do it? Well, like, what is it? I feel terrible not knowing.
No, it's fucking hilarious. Okay. Right? Because it's like, I remember like when my like grandmother would say shit and I'd be like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. And she'd be like, like all the young ones. And now just recognizing that I have a whole bunch of cultural history that you don't have.
Yes. Yeah. It's well, we connect on so many levels other than pop culture, like this, like this little
yeah,
bit. Hey.
Just that little bit about, you know, when I was like, oh, I remember John Howard and you're like, who?
He's the one who went to me and died and disappeared. No. And also I'm trying to play like a little game in my head where I match all the names you say.
Oh, I'm so,
no, it's so fun.
That's really cute. No, that's Harold Holt, the Prime Minister who drowned.
Okay.
John Howard's still alive, got very big eyebrows.
Sorry, John.
sorry.
Thought you went swimming and left.
That was Harold?
Exited.
It just makes me scream with laughter. No, John Howard's the one that did the massive, like, gun control laws.
Oh, okay. So that was a good move on his
part. It's a good move. Yeah. Like, we think the rest of, like, what he did is shit, but we always, like, pay homage to that.
Yes. Yeah.
Like, everything else, like, his stance on immigration and boat people and stuff like that, we say, fuck you, John.
Yeah, okay.
And he's part of the Liberal Party, which is conservative. Maddie's still working on this stuff. It's okay.
I'll get there when I'm 27. When I have that.
There's more. Like, think of in the future. Like, that's you got so many other things to be interested in right now. And obviously, like, you didn't have your early 20s in Canberra, so it's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So
going on, I want to say, how did you go? Like, I know we've covered the history, but what was your main sort of motivator? Like it was family, it was money, it was what got you there in the end?
Yeah, like just pure determination to have a creative career that, and also like, you know, once I'd been a mum, to only do that in really short periods of time. So I've always kind of like just regarded my business as not like the full feature of my life. It's a thing that I build around the corners. So like it's always been in around 10 hours a week. There's been some times where I've had 20 hours a week, but yeah, that's a real anomaly and I don't like that.
Yes. Wow.
So yeah, I think that's been the driving force. And then also there's, you know, obviously the goals part of me is like, okay, well, I've done that amount of money. What can I do to reach another amount of money?
Yeah.
And now it's also as well, like at the age I am, it's like, right, okay, well, how can I really set ourselves up so that we have financial abundance like for the rest of our lives? I also want to make sure that I totally pay Chris back for his letting go of his career to support me and look after the kids, you know, be the primary carer role. So just making sure that I've done a good job of looking after my family and that kind of stuff. That's really good. I'm proud of myself and there's more to do, and also like more philanthropic work. And like from that start of like going, okay, I had a kid, and then getting to where I am now, there's just been so many little journeys in between of like, you know, I had a really large team at one point with like 20 plus staff. That was like 2014 through to 2016-ish.
Yeah.
Where it got really big, and I really discovered I hated that so much. That was when we hit like 2.8 million in a year, and it just wasn't worth it to me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it was too much stress for me and took my focus away from my kids, and I was like this. And also like you get to a point where like as a creative, I just want to be left alone to create.
Yes, yeah.
When you have a big team and you're the CEO, you don't. You're the manager and you're looking after logistics. So part of the big reason why we had a big team as well was because my goal workbooks, which I created in 2010.
Yeah, which are life-changing.
Yeah, they are. Thank you so much for recognizing that doll. We started printing them ourselves and doing these massive print runs in China, and it would be like $500,000 investment in
– wow.
It was massive, you know. It's like, you know, at that point it was like a mortgage. It's not, you know, it's half a mortgage now. Yeah. But and then we would have three distribution houses in England, America and Australia because my market is so diverse.
Yeah.
And then we would have to send out like, you know, 80,000 parcels in 3 months, and just the huge logistics of having a physical product business is very, very different from having a digital-based business.
Yes, yeah.
So after that I was like, this is fucked, this is so stressful. And, like, we had some crazy experiences. Like, we had a distribution house in America who basically held our books hostage, and they would – like, we had all of these orders, we'd paid them, and they weren't sending anything out for weeks and weeks. And this is, like, critical because my workbooks are deadline-based. Like people want them by Christmas for a present, or they want them in January to set their goals for the year ahead. So 95% of our sales are in that time. And if you're not sending like in 2 weeks, that's insane. And she just wouldn't send. Like, I don't know what was going on, if she had like staffing problems, whatever. And what we ended up having to do was I had a contractor, a tech contractor in the US, and he and a friend of his decided to go on this rescue mission, and they went and hired a huge truck. There was a massive snowstorm in America, and they went to go and get the books because this lady wouldn't release them to go to another distribution house to front up there. And this woman was extorting us. She was like, oh no, in order to release them, you have to pay us $5,000. And then they'd put two pallets on. Then she's like, oh, well, no, it's actually cost more than that. So it's an extra $2,000. And it just kept on going. Like, I think it ended up costing us like 10 grand to liberate these fucking books.
What?
It was insane. We were like, do we need to call the police? Because
how could she do that?
I've heard so many crazy, so much crazy shit about distribution houses. They're like, it's like Wild Wild West sort of stuff.
Wow.
Like, I know like Passion Planner has talked about this recently, which is another like big planner, and their distribution house went bankrupt and basically weren't sending anything, and they lied to all of their the people they were working with. And so they had to kind of do this massive rejig. And, of course, that's deadline-based as well. So I really feel for her because I know she's had some huge issues over the years. Yeah, anyway, so they ended up getting the books. And this is like the week before Christmas. And we're just trying to get these people's, like, the books out to people before Christmas. And they ended up, like, going through a snowstorm in a fucking truck with just, you know, like, tons and tons of books to take them literally across America. It was a huge drive. And so they were like taking photos along the way of like the snow conditions they were going through. And then we would like live update where the Operation Rescue Books mission was at. And thankfully, like, people were so fucking cool about it. You know, like, we were offering refunds. We were offering, like, we gave them like bonus $50 credit to use in our store. We were like giving all the updates. We're being really upfront with what was happening.
I love that, the truth. Yeah.
Yeah. And we were like, oh my God, this is what's happening. Oh my God. Like, and so every single day we would have operation updates on social media, and people were so invested as well. Like, it became like, we would say where they were on the map and where they'd got to. And
such a loyal fan base. Hey, like, mm-hmm. they just love and yeah. yeah.
Well, oh. I just like, I try and treat that like, these people are my friends.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I always say to my customer service people, like, these people are our friends. And so many of them are, because I've like known, like, so many have been in my business for 20 plus years buying
yeah,
from me.
Yeah.
So many I've met in real person. So many people are customers who were my friends originally, you know, like,
yes,
still
yeah.
friends. So I don't want to treat anyone dodgily. Like, we just no. want to make everything good for people.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we finally got to a new distribution house and got them all sent out, but it was massive and very stressful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, is it goodness. Time for an ad break though?
I think it is time. It's actually almost time for this little episode to be over.
Oh my God.
I know, how quick has that gone? Oh, I forgot God. Our second ad break.
oh no, that's fine. Can you spontaneously burp though?
No, I'm not really.
It's a real oh, gift. Wow.
Yeah,
actually, if it's not spontaneous, though, it can go for quite a long time. I sneeze like a fairy and I burp like a trucker.
Say that again.
I sneeze like a fairy, like they're little, and then like a trucker is like. Oh,
Leonie. Leonie Dawson.
She refuses to be categorized.
We love ya.
Yeah, boy. Talk to you next time. We'll talk some more business adventures then.